Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Roker Report podcast in association with the Southern Community Soup Kitchen. It's Gav back ahead of the Chef Wed game on Friday night. And joining me is Chris. Hey mate.
Hello mate. Yes, I'm nervous about this one. We'll get into it. But it reminds me of when Craig says he's nervous about playing Preston. That's me.
Yeah. Yeah, because you know a lot of Chef Wed fans, don't you? So yeah. you're either going to have a really happy Sunday morning when you turn up at the kids' football and rub it in, or you're going to be sitting in the car watching it from the car park, aren't you? You're avoiding everybody.
We've been talking all year and I've been going banging on about how good we are and, oh, isn't it great the way we're doing stuff? And if they beat us, man, it'll just be ridiculous.
They've beat us a couple of times over recent years as well, haven't they? So, we've got to start edging those victories up just for you, I think.
I was looking back at the record, and we'll come on to that. But yeah, I'll take the playoff. I'll sit on the playoff for a while and keep mentioning that one. But otherwise, yeah, well, it's not fantastic reading, is it?
No, and I mean, obviously, we did the last pod and talked about the defeat to Cardiff, and there's no real need to go back into that because, you know, bit of a disappointing one. But our opponent, Chef Wed, dear me, they are an absolute mess. This just feels like a banana skin because they're so shit that we shouldn't get beat. But, like, it's one of them, isn't it? It's the rock bottom of the table, haven't won a game all season. The owner's an absolute embarrassment. Just sacked a manager who got them promoted, who all the fans love, has replaced them with this fella, Cisco, who none of the fans want. They all think he's a dick. Mm-hmm. Keeps making comments in the press and stuff, which are just digging himself an even deeper hole. They haven't really spent any money on improving the playing squad. They already had an aging squad. They just scraped promotion. It feels like it's on course to be a complete disaster for them this season. And I've spent the week really praying that they don't sack the manager because it feels like he's clinging onto it by his fingertips. And yeah. Before we recorded, I was just browsing their main fan forum to see what people were saying. And they're in disbelief that he still has a job. It's like, really, we should be putting the final nail in the coffin and battering these, shouldn't we? They're absolutely shite. But you do have to caveat that with this is Sunderland. And as we showed on Sunday, when we should win a game, maybe sometimes we don't and we've got that in us. So it's a nervy one, isn't it? But these are terrible. I mean, come on, let's be realistic. We don't beat these. It's a really bad result.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be bumping into a few of them on the school run in the days leading up to the game. And to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if a few of them, honestly, because the way they've been talking in recent weeks, I wouldn't be surprised if a few of them turned around and said, we hope that you absolutely batter us and put him out of his misery.
We've been there before, haven't we, with our manager in the past, yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're just like, God, I remember being like that with Simon Grayson, just praying that we would lose that game against Bolton, thinking he's got to get sacked eventually. You know, and it's a weird position to be in as a football fan, wanting your team to lose. But I think the problem with Chef Wed, though, is that regardless of the fact if this guy gets sacked, this idiot owner who they all hate, he's the man replacing him, and getting a decent manager in is going to be tough. So it's like, I'm sort of reading what their fans are saying and thinking, God, I've been there before. Yeah. It makes you so thankful for what you've got, because It wasn't even that long ago when that was us, when we were just a complete pile of shit with a squad that had no hope, and you rock bottom the table and you think, freaking hell, where do we go from here?
It just makes you so glad that we've got the plan, that we've got a club that has a plan, because you look at them and it just looks all over the shop, like they haven't got a clue what they're doing. I mean, there's a one fella who's about the same age as me, so I'm not going to say how old he is and how long he's been going, but he's been going to Wednesday Farewell, season ticket for Donkeys as long as he can remember, never hardly missed a game. And this season he's turned around and says, I'm not going to Hillsborough until they go, either the manager or the owner or both of them. He just wants them out. He wants the club to basically reset. And it's bizarre, isn't it? You're talking months after, you know, can remember that kind of epic win they had in the playoff semi-final when they were, what, was it 3-0 down, 4-0 down? Something ridiculous.
4-0, wasn't it? 4-0. I think they were losing 4-0. First leg they were getting be 4-0 against Peterborough and then managed to turn it around, yeah. I mean,
you're talking, what, if you say that was kind of April, well, probably May, you're saying, well, 4 months ago. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. And now they're saying, right, well, we need to kind of go back down, reset already. And it's 4 months later. I mean, it's just a club without a plan. I was looking at their home games this season. And if the stats are right, in the four games that they've had so far at Hillsborough this season, which maybe kind of explains why this fella doesn't want to go back, they've had 6 shots on target in 4 games.
Jesus.
I mean,
lack of firepower there. Then
I mean, it's well, and again, I mean, talking about firepower, I was looking at some of their kind of how they've set up this season at times, and I think in one game they had Gregory and Windass wide on the flanks. I mean, those two can hardly run. I mean, you're playing them wide. It's not exactly electric pace down the flanks, is it? I mean, imagine watching that team with Gregory and Windass on the flanks, on like there's wide players. Bloody hell. I mean, no wonder you wouldn't go back. I mean, I'd rather be doing something else on a Saturday, going to B&Q or something like that. It's just crap. So, I mean, yeah, they're absolutely desperate. But you know what it is? It's Sunderland. These type of games just get us worried. It's the idiot and buy effect, because I was at Filbert Street that day, and ever since I've just presumed when something shouldn't happen, it tends to happen to Sunderland. Then just talking about Gregory Windass wide, the other thing I noticed in their last game, which just defies belief, they had Hendrick and Barry Bannon in a central midfield pair, like 31-year-old and a 33-year-old. I mean, they realised even in League One, Barry Bannon couldn't play in a two. And now in the Championship, he's playing as a centre midfielder. I mean, just as in a pair where he can't just float and do what he wants. And the whole thing just seems a mess. And like you said, the worst thing that can happen is that they get a bounce with a new manager before the week, before the game. So we've just got to keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah. I'm praying he stays in the job. I think he would have been sacked by now, though, surely. You know, it's like, you know, if he's going to get sacked, it would have happened over the weekend to give even the interim team in charge a chance to put a team together for the game. He's going to be in a job till Friday. But I wonder how much the fact that this game is on TV on Friday plays into the thinking. Because, like, the owner, he isn't a complete idiot. You know, he's been there quite a while, hasn't he? I think he's been there about 6 years. And you know, He's hired and fired many managers, seen it all, I presume. And he knows the effect of that. You know, if they get battered up by us on Friday night with the TV cameras there, with the fans have been throwing tennis balls on the pitch and chanting for the manager out and chanting for the owner, it's not a good look. No. And it's one of them, isn't it? It's like, how far can you take it? Do you try and limit the damage somehow ahead of that game? But it appears like he's going to be pretty stubborn, I think if one thing I've noticed, and again, I'm just seeing it from the outside, but they sacked Darren Moore, who got them promoted. All the fans loved him. And then there's been this very public falling out dispute between the owner and Darren Moore, even after he's left, talking about the reasons why he left. I don't know if you saw it, but the owner put you could tell he typed it up. It was like a hastily put together rant, I guess, about Darren Moore and all the rest of it. And I had secondhand embarrassment reading it. It was just like, you can tell this guy's a bit of a clown, like. And I feel sorry for the Chef Wed fans, to be honest, because, like I say, we've been there before. Yeah. They're a big club. And what you mentioned them playoff games that they had at the end of last season. That was the first time I'd really taken notice. And obviously they'd kind of thrown automatic promotion, hadn't they? But they still made the playoffs with a really high points total. And I took a little bit of notice around the playoffs because I was thinking, God, what have they done wrong? And I saw them in them playoff games. I'm like, you can't go into the championship in that state. Mm. And it's been telegraphed. I'm sure their fans saw it all coming as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I, like I said, when I've been talking to them over the last couple of weeks, they were absolutely staggered because, you know, their team's kind of rock bottom. They can't buy a win. They've only had two draws this season in the kind of eight games they've played so far. And I think what they started off, like losing the first four, and then rather than concentrate on that, the owner takes time to create this war of words with the former. Like, what's that? When we were talking about it, it was like, if you're in that situation and your club's in a mess, the best thing to do at that point is just to release a statement saying, we're looking forward. We're not looking back. It's happened. You know, it's behind us. We need to move this club forward. But dragging up what's happened is making things worse for him. But it sounds like he's the type of owner where he's just what he thinks goes and he's doubling down on it. And it sounds like even if he's made a mistake, even if he thinks he's made a mistake with his manager, he seems like the type of owner just to say, no, I'm going to stick with him. It's my choice. I've brought him in. I'm going to back him. And the fans are going to vote with their feet because, I mean, with it being live on the telly Friday night, it'd be interesting to see what the Wednesday attendance was. I mean, if you go back to that playoff game where it was bouncing, the one last season and the one against us, remember the atmosphere at Hillsborough that night?
I mean, yeah, it was brilliant. Really good, yeah.
I mean, it kind of carries them. And the best thing for us, again, is if they vote with their feet. But they'll be doing it on purpose because the one change. But the other thing, I've been winding them up about it because if they do, this owner as well, he's the type of character to go out and say, right, we'll stuff you. If I have to get rid of the manager I've picked, I'm gonna offer it to Neil Warnock or Chris Wilder or someone like that. Yeah. And I'm gonna
someone their fans would begrudgingly have to accept as the manager, as somebody who's a legend on the other side of the fence.
I was considering, I mean, it'd be like us kind of appointing Keegan back in the day or something, wouldn't it? I mean, I'm gonna start an online anonymous campaign to get Warnock into Hillsborough because I'd just find it funny and I'd just give us more reason to laugh at them. But no, like, I mean, to be fair, like you said, Wednesday have been similar to us in many ways. I mean, I think they haven't been in the top flight since the early 2000s, like 20 years or something like that. Go back to, I think they got relegated, what was it? Yeah, start of the century, kind of 2000.
2000,
They got relegated. I remember being at the game Phillips scored and they had Wim Jonk and all that sort of stuff and went down. But they've been struggling ever since and they're a bigger club than that. Hillsborough's kind of looking its age now when you go. It's kind of you go into those little tunnels when you go into the away game and it's kind of tight and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, they're in a bad place. But this, again, I go back, it's Sunderland. And these are the type of games that get me more worried than... I'd rather be underdogs as Sunderland. I'm more used to that than... It's weird when you're expected to win. I need to get used to it a bit more, but I'm not yet.
It's just a result of how well we've done in the last few years, isn't it? We're turning up everywhere now, and people know how good we are. Mm. Like I mentioned on the last pod, half time, the Cardiff fans on Twitter were just raving about Sunderland. Bloody hell, how good are Sunderland? Mm. It's like we are getting a reputation now, and it's how you manage that, isn't it? Players like Jack Clark playing really well over a spell of games. Everyone's talking about how great Jack Clark is, not just Sunderland fans. He starts getting noticed and they're like, right, we're going to double up on him. We're going to kick him all over the place. And this is just it's the price of success in many ways, is that you just have to accept that's going to happen. With Chef Wed, I think with so much going on around the noise around the, and we've been in this position, especially with being a big club, with so much unrest and the fans not being on side with what's going on, and it does distract from what happens on the pitch. And I sort of wonder whether their team and their players now, leading into this game, I think we could really do without playing these.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not going to be relishing playing. They would have been praying for like another team playing poorly. Yeah. They're not going to enjoy having to chase after us for 90 minutes. And we've got to harness that. We've really got to harness that and do what so many teams have done to Sunderland over the years and come to the stadium like when we've been in bad moments. And be like, right, get the crowd on their case early doors, frustrate them, keep the ball, don't let them do anything. All the things that teams have done to us on God knows how many occasions at the Stadium of Light, because we've basically handed them that opportunity on a plate. Well, now we've got that opportunity to do that to somebody else. We can go there and go, let's piss everybody off in the stadium. And just another thing on the, you mentioned about the crowd. I did wonder when they gave us an extra allocation of tickets, yeah, whether that was a sign that, whether that was a sign that there's maybe, they maybe haven't sold many, and people are just, people who've got the choice and aren't season ticket holders have just went, I'm not going there to watch that shit. So it's going to be interesting, especially with it being on TV as well. You know, people maybe just looking and thinking, I was watching in the house. I might not even bother because I've given up on them or whatever.
Quite often getting that extra allocation is a sign of the opposition saying, we don't really care anymore. It's almost kind of saying, because the other thing is the more Sunderland fans are there, that the more influence they've got on us, on our team. So it's like the owner would clearly rather make a few more quid than Sunderland make his fans making more noise. But you're right. Like you said, they're in a desperate place. And looking back at their games this season, and you know, after losing the first four, I was looking at the Leeds draw away, because obviously that just stuck out as a bit of an anomaly. Like, you know, they lost the first four and then they went to Leeds and got a draw. But they seem to go to, I think the manager seems to want to play this 3-4-3, more attacking, kind of getting more players up the pitch. But when I was talking about that Gregory and Windass wide, it was the Leeds away game in Ipswich at home where they had quite a bit of possession. Maybe slightly unlucky to actually come out of that without getting a point when they could beat 1-0. It was only 1-0 at home to Ipswich, who were flying. So those two games, they played 5-4-1. And they played a block of five at the back. Basically, it wasn't wing-backs. They played five at the back. And I think that the manager kind of looked at his players and thought, right, well, we're just going to kind of put two bags in there and hope for the best. Came out of those two games with a point and nearly nicked another one against Ipswich. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's what we were up against on Friday night. I think he'll be more pragmatic. He tried to go more expansive at Swansea and they got thumped 3-0. And actually, there was a period of the game in the first half where actually they were decent. But then I think just the heads are in a place where Swansea went ahead, got on the front foot, and then basically that was it. Game over, got walloped. So I suspect that he's going to go back to those games where they almost got something out of it. He'll probably look at, and they drew against Borough at home as well. Had a lot less possession. Borough kept the ball a bit more, I think, than Ipswich do, as we saw at the Stadium of Light with Ipswich. So yeah, so I'm expecting him to be more pragmatic than he went to Swansea, which was just bizarre when they needed a result. And I think we'll be up against the side just sitting on the edge of their box, five at the back. I'd be amazed if he did anything else.
Yeah, it's a difficult one for them really, because he hasn't got much choice. And another thing which has been going on amongst all the other noise is that the new manager, he's frozen out a couple of stalwarts, hasn't he? Marvin Johnson, I was reading earlier, the fans were chanting his name and stuff at the last game. And Rhys James, who used to play for us, both players who were part of the team who got promoted and were an integral part of that side, frozen out. There's obviously a lot more going on behind the scenes as well as on the pitch and with the ownership and all the rest of it. And he's been getting questioned about it from the press and not really given clear answers on why they're not involved.
There's Patterson as well. I think some of the lads who I speak to think he should be in the team because he's one of those players who, you know, smashes into a tackle and gets the rest of the team up. And he's one of those old school players, Callum Patterson. But he's not getting a game either. I think he's been on the bench most of the time. I saw as well, they signed a young 19, 20-year-old from Paris Saint-Germain. And I think he's taken time to find his feet. I think he's only been on the bench a couple of times. I don't know whether he's taken a couple of knocks, but he hasn't been involved. But they brought in a French midfielder on loan from a Portuguese club. And more often than not, he's being played in the middle of a back three. He's a central midfielder. And then they've got Jeff Hendrick and Barry Bannon playing as the two central midfielders. So, I mean, again, just this manager just seems to be shooting himself in the foot with everything he does. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see their lineup and what he does. Because with the results the way they are, you wouldn't be surprised if a manager just turned around and said, right, well, we're that desperate, I'm going to bring some of these players back in, get them back into the fold. Or whether it's that far gone, where you'll just never see them again until this manager goes, a bit like a Paolo Di Canio situation.
Yeah, well, I think he knows his time's up soon, doesn't he? He's not thick. So he probably knows that after this game, if they don't win, he's going to be out of a job and heading back to Spain with a nice payoff, which I'm sure he won't give a shit about, really, you know. He'll just be thinking, well, okay, bye. I'll move on to the next job. Interesting line in the Yorkshire Examiner after the weekend from a writer called Ricky Charlesworth. He said, apathy and anger reign supreme at Hillsborough right now. If this was Crisis Club bingo, Sheffield Wednesday would be clearing their throats to shout full house. it just has a sense of inevitability about this game, doesn't it? In that it's just, we've been there before. You know, you build up to a game and you just know it's going to be a pile of shit and it's all going to go wrong. And from our perspective, that should be like a real motivator. But the apathetic Sunderland fan still buried deep within my black heart is saying this is the type of situation where we would just fuck up. But I just think there's not a better time to be playing Chef Wed, really, is there?
For anyone who has a grievance with anything Sunderland are doing on the football side of the club at the minute, just have a look at Sheffield Wednesday. I mean, it's a perfect example of a club without direction, without a plan, without kind of moving forward. And we've been there and we know how it feels. And we've said it a couple of times that we're just enjoying where Sunderland are. We're not spectacular. We're not kind of going to run away with the league, but we're just happy that the club have got a direction, because when you're supporting a team who are going on like Sheffield Wednesday are, it's just horrific. You don't know what's going to come up next. You don't know where it's going to go. You don't know what the end point's going to be. I mean, how low do you end up going before you come back? And that's the worry.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got to look at our club and just be grateful that we're in the position we are, because it wasn't that long ago we were in the same place.
Yeah, yeah. And again, we're sort of the opposite end of the scale. We got promoted through the playoffs like they did. But we'd obviously built a team in League One to be able to prepare for the Championship, where they just didn't do any of that. Alex Miller from the Sheffield Star tweeted, Wednesday fans chanting against Chancery and Cisco for Marvin Johnson. This spiralling, decaying mood has taken place just 117 days on from Wembley. A masterclass in how not to build on success.
Yeah.
And I would actually say that Sunderland are the masterclass in how to build on success, in terms of the way we, basically under this owner, bought players and built a team and put a structure in place, knowing that once we eventually got promoted, we would be all right in the league above. And, you know, not to gloat, but, you know, I'm just glad that we went the other way.
Yeah, and just to put their kind of, I talked about their shots on target statistic earlier on, that they've had 6 shots on target in their home games so far. And one of the lads stuck a stat in about Ellis Sims this so far this season for Coventry, and Sheffield Wednesday have had the same amount of shots on target at home this season as Ellis Sims has for Coventry throughout the whole of the season so far, on his own.
And he hasn't scored. And he's been absolutely woeful for Coventry. So yeah, it just shows you, that we've got to take advantage. We've got to be able to go there. And I mentioned before it should be a motivator for us, knowing all of this is going on. We've also got to go there and just see it as another game and be like, right, we've just got to go there, do what we do best, and take the points away. Because it's going to be quite a strange atmosphere for our players to play in. I don't know. I imagine, depending on what kind of person you are, whether that's sort of a distraction or a motivator. Like, if that was me and I was going out there, I'd be like buzzing to be playing there. I'd be thinking, I can't wait to play in this game and just make them feel even worse.
Yeah.
Because as a player, you should be wanting to do that. But then there's other players in the squad who might be maybe a bit younger, a bit less experienced, might be a bit overawed by the occasion. I don't know. But we've got to be ruthless.
Oh, yeah. But I think Sunderland having the extra allocation, and it'll be, you know, the Sunderland end will be full, and it won't be that far off being a home game, but it'll feel, you know, with that end behind the goal, absolutely packed, and I think that'll be fine for the lads. I don't think the Sheffield Wednesday atmosphere will impact our players. If anything, if you know, first 10 minutes we kind of play a keep ball and we have a few chances, and like you said, if the home crowd get a bit restless and there's chance and all that sort of stuff, it can only help us. I mean, but the thing is, we need to do our thing. We need to do, play our part in creating that. That if we get on the front foot straight away, their morale, I mean, their chins are hitting the floor, and we need to step on that and just be on it. And if we don't let them into the game and press them from the off, and especially if we get an early goal, I mean, that's it. Their heads are going to drop. The fans are going to probably, you know, a goal in the first 10 minutes, you'll see them streaming out. You know, it's going to be one of them. But having said that, you know, we haven't won there since 2007. You know, we haven't won in 90 minutes anyway. I mean, you can say we won on aggregate in the playoffs, but it was the old air guitar world record attempt back in 2007.
I was there. Yeah, I was there.
Yeah, strumming away.
No, I was part of the crowd who were shouting, "What the fucking hell is that?" Have you ever seen the action? Because it was part of it was all filmed for a documentary or a TV show or something, wasn't it? So it's still out there.
It's on YouTube.
The band somewhere, were called Saxon. Yeah, they were called Saxon, I think. And yeah, they just gave up in the end, didn't they? They just sort of walked off the pitch halfway through, realised nobody was joining in. It was interesting that. But yeah, the other thing as well, which I haven't mentioned, there's been a protest group formed by the Chef Wed fans, and it's all anonymous as well. They haven't come forward and said who they are.
Brilliant.
But they're operating on social media.
I'm
called
joining that.
The 1867 group. And there's a Q&A on the Examiner's website with somebody from the group. And apparently they've got a balloon protest planned for Friday.
Brilliant, right?
Well, so at some point in the game, there's going to be a load of balloons chucked on the pitch, I think.
I'm getting involved. I'm going to write me Warnock banner. I'm going to have Warnock in.
But I don't know whether it'll actually do anything. I think they were the ones behind the tennis balls being thrown on the pitch, and to be honest, it was a little bit pathetic. There wasn't that many balls really thrown. It happened, but it's sort of like, well, for it to be effective, there needs to be a lot more than just like 20 or 30 tennis balls thrown on the pitch. But you never know. Let's see what happens on Friday. It's nice to be on the other end of the circus in one of these games, and it's not us. And
it is,
you know. I do have sympathy for Chef Wed fans, but part of us does feel sort of having been in that position before, yeah, where you just hate everything about the football club and the way it's being run. It makes us glad we're out on the other side. And I mean, hopefully to some Chef Wed fans, that they can see us, see the way we play, see the makeup of our squad, maybe see how many fans turn up from Sunderland and see that there is light at the end of the tunnel. It's not always going to be as shit as this for them. They've just got to be prepared to dig in and, like we did, spend a lot of time finding out what your direction actually is and who you are and all the rest of it. It's nice that's not us for once.
Football goes in cycles, isn't it? You've just got to wait your turn and wait your turn when you're actually half decent. But
yeah,
it was the same where we used to look back and we used to phone over Brentford and Brighton and, you know, all these teams who were doing well. And there was a few others where they seemed to be on the right track, and we were kind of, oh, I wish we could be like that, you know. But yeah, like I said, I mean, you know, any little grievance you've got with, oh, you know, we could have done with an extra centre midfielder or whatever like that, I mean, yeah, okay, all of those things might be valid, but bloody hell, it could be a lot worse.
Yeah, well, we haven't even talked that much about ourselves. I've just enjoyed chatting about how shit Chef Wed are. But yeah, we lost on Sunday. As we said on the last pod, we maybe expected a couple of changes and Mowbray didn't do it. I guess after a win, it's a bit more difficult to just drop players. Mm. We've lost a game. On Monday night, the under-21s played against Derby and there were quite a lot of first-teamers involved in that. We had Jensen Sealt, we had Nectar Triantis playing at the back. Chris Rigg started in the middle. Adil Oshish played and scored. Nazari Roussin played and he was fantastic. Hamia played. So, you know, we had quite a lot of first teamers involved in that game. And really for those players, that was their chance to show Mowbray why they should be either starting or more involved for this game, given we've just lost one. I don't know if you caught any of it, but like I say, Roussin was brilliant.
Yeah.
I know it was a 21s game, but what you want to see, you've got to kind of go into it with the knowledge, right, it's an under-21s game. They're playing obviously a lower level of opposition and all the rest of it. But are they going to take this opportunity seriously? Like, are they going to play and just not try very hard to impress? Or are they going to go out there and show Mowbray why they should be playing games? And for me, I thought the two lads at the back played pretty well. Chris Rigg had a good game. There's another lad in the middle,
Marshall Burke.
Marshall Burke, yeah. But I thought he looked really good. Ellis Taylor actually played pretty well, had a canny game. But for me, the real standouts were Roussin and Oshish. Roussin in particular, you could tell that he wanted to show what he can do, and he was just making these runs in behind constantly. The Derby, the poor lads at the back for Derby, they didn't have a clue how to handle him. But it was his runs in behind and getting on the ball and just causing bother that really impressed me. And then Oshish playing on the other side, he got himself a goal. Like I said, that was all because of some really good movement from Roussin and a bit of really good football from us. But Oshish, I thought, had a cracking game. Could have had two or three more. He took a free kick, which was a good save from the Derby keeper, and had a couple of other little chances and just looked really tidy. And it was good to see. It was good to see that these lads are taking their chance to impress. And it does give Mowbray something to think about. I think publicly, he'll be asked about it in the press conference and stuff, and he might not be drawn on it. He'll probably, like he does, he'll caveat it by saying, he's got to have time to settle in and we don't want to rush and all. Like, that's just the way he kind of approaches these things. But I think deep down, he'll have watched that and thought, bloody hell, I could do with Roussin in the team sooner rather than later. And Oshish, he looks a player. You know what I mean? He's already talked about him publicly, hasn't he, even before all of this? He mentioned that he's looked good in training and the bounce games and stuff. It means he's got something to think about now, doesn't it?
It does, it does. I mean, he had seven of those players who were on the bench that played the other night for the under-23s. Or is it under-23s or under-21s now? I can't remember what it is.
It's under-21s again, isn't it? Under-21s
now. Yeah. Change it back. Yeah, but so seven of those. There was only Roberts and Bishop who didn't kind of take part in that game. And, you know, I think a few people have mentioned that it looked, you know, with Patterson maybe struggling and it looks like we're kind of wrapped Bishop up and Cottonwell not playing him. I wouldn't be surprised to see Bishop in goal. I mean, in a game like this, if we've got faith in Bishop and we've brought him in as, you know, thinking he's a good keeper, then you know, this is the type of game to say, well, you know, if Patterson's got an issue, bring him out, put Bishop in goal. And then the other seven lads, because you've got to include Ellis Taylor as well, because he was on the bench at the weekend and he played well. It's good to see him coming through, actually, at left back, because, you know, let's say, you know, Huggins, if you look at Huggins' history, he tends to pick injuries up when he plays a few games, and this is probably his best run in the side.
Just on Ellis Taylor, I was thinking, because obviously he's been here quite a while, I wasn't expecting him to still be here. And when I was watching the game, I was thinking, like, if this, just get out of your head that he's been here ages and he's came through the academy. Yeah. If this was a lad we just signed and he played like that,
yeah,
and he scored a penalty, he took like a Penenka, didn't he, down the middle, a chip down the middle, a bit cheeky. But his actual performance was really good. And I was thinking, if we just signed him, say that was Pembele, and he played like that, we would have been thinking, bloody hell, get him in the team. So you've got to be fair to Ellis Taylor, you know what I mean? You've got to say, at least he's trying to take his chance too. To be fair, he always looks decent for the 2021's team, but he deserves a bit of praise for that.
It was one of the reasons I mentioned him, because like I said, there's got to be a concern that Huggins is going to pick up an injury, and I don't want to tempt fate, and everyone's desperate for Huggins to have a run because he deserves it, problems he's had. But it's good to see Ellis Taylor in there, and, you know, like I said, we've got a young lad to back him up, and I haven't seen him play a few times. I don't think I've got any qualms about him coming in if Huggins did pick up a knock. But yeah, like I said, so the other six, Seilton, Triantis, I think it's good to get for them to get minutes under their belt, because they're going to, and it's funny because with these two, I always think about Seilton and Triantis in the same way as if you go back to our first season at the Stadium of Light, when we had started off with Andy Melville and Richard Ord in the centre, and they were kind of first choice. And then we had two young lads backing them up, Jody Craddock, Darren Williams, and then they got the chance. And then Melville and Ord couldn't get back in. And I just feel like we've got those four centre-halves, O'Neill and Ballard, Seilton, Triantis. The two young lads have just got to be a bit patient, because at some point, O'Neill's going to pick up an injury, Ballard's going to pick up a knock, they're going to get suspended, whatever, and then they're going to get their chance. And if they're ready, they can do something similar to what Craddock and Williams did all those years ago, and just kind of keep their place if they play well. So so it's good to see them getting minutes. Rigg, Rigg's desperate for games this season, and we're signing players as well who are similar in Norshish and who are looking sharp as well. So it'd be nice to see Rigg a bit more. I'm glad he's getting on the bench, but we're not kind of seen him too much yet. Or sheesh, yeah. I mean, look, we said in the couple of cameos he's had so far from the bench, he looks sharp, he's got a nice touch. And it'd be great to see him from the off. It'd be good to see him in a full game. And I actually think by the fact that Mowbray's thrown him in and brought him on when he has so quickly, that I think Mowbray's a fan already, like you said. Mm-hmm. I think he likes him. I think he wants to play him. I think he's actually desperate to play him. I'd be interested to see if he comes in. Roosan as well, straight in, getting the kind of work permit sorted and getting his visas all ready to go. And yeah, I mean, his movement, I had it on in the background, but every time I kind of looked up, he seemed to be on his bike. Just he wanted it. He just never seemed to stop. He just always seemed to be on the go, wanting the ball in behind. And especially at home, it's what we've been missing. And there was obviously Hamia, who he needs a goal just to kind of get him.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I wasn't having said all of this. Like, I was impressed by it. Hamia just didn't stand out in that game.
He needs a
goal. At all. He needs some confidence, doesn't he?
Yeah, he needs a goal. He just needs to score. All he needs is a goal, I think, and then he'd be off. But yeah, it was interesting to see them play, because the game on Monday night and then the game on Friday. I wonder if there was, because that's why I was kind of umming and ahhing, thinking, was I surprised to see them all in, or was I not? Because it's only a few days before the game. But if they all need minutes and they all need that sharpness, and they brought off with about 20 minutes to go, Ashish and Roosan.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, thinking towards the game, I'm completely torn, because knowing Mowbray as we do, he's quite conservative. Half of us says that he's going to put the same team out if he can, bar anything that's forced. Maybe Patterson, if it's forced, he's going to give him a rest. But so half of us says he's going to keep it exactly the same, because he's that way inclined. And the other half says he might make two or three changes and bring Oshish in for Pritchard. Maybe I'd honestly, and as much as people might not want it for this one, I'd have Bellingham on the bench.
If Pierre Ekwa's back, that's another thing we've got to think about. If Ekwa is potentially back for this game,
I wouldn't risk him for this game. I don't think we necessarily need him. I'd bring Bellingham out because I just think he needs a break, and this is a good chance for him to just sit a game out. Sheffield Wednesday, we should be able to. I keep saying this. I'm going to keep touching wood, but we should be able to beat them without Bellingham. As good as he's been fantastic. But I want him fresh. I want to keep him fresh this season. You can't keep flogging him. He played three games in a week last week, and then a game on a Friday night. It's just pushing him. He only played 20 games last season. He's only just turned 18. I just don't want us to keep flogging him. And I'm sure the coaching staff exactly the same. So it's picking and choosing when the best time to bring him out is. And yeah, I wouldn't mind if he was kind of put on the bench, or even just give him a break, give him a weekend off or something like that. But
Leicester are top of the league and they've rotated their team pretty much every game.
Yeah.
Their managers went with the idea, I'm going to rotate. Yeah. I've got a squad, I've got lots of players, make the most of it. And to date, Mowbray hasn't done that. We've had quite a lot of injuries. We've brought in players who haven't been ready to take part. But then when you look at what happened on Monday, like I say, and I have five players at least who I would say played well in that game who should be knocking on the door now, I think he's got to use his squad. I mean, you look at this as well. Like we've went into enormous detail with on this game, they're shite.
Yeah.
So if we've got confidence in some of these lads, they've got to play at some point. And I would be very tempted to rotate three or four players potentially here and look at it and think, the last game, I'll be honest, I've not, and again, I mentioned it on the last pod, not been particularly impressed to date by Burstow. Not saying it's never going to happen. I just think, if we're going to rotate out somebody, probably be him. You mentioned Pritchard before. Pritchard didn't have his best game. Potentially bring him out. We've also got a caveat that with, Dak's going to be knocking back on the door. Ekwa's going to be knocking back on the door soon. So we've got players to bring back in. With all of these options, we've got to think about rotation, because you're just going to keep having injuries. And God forbid some of the more important players got injured because we were refusing to rotate. So I think this is a good chance to change it up a little bit, if I'm honest, and see what some of these lads are made of.
if this is me on Football Manager, I'm making about 7 or 8 changes, honestly. I mean, I wouldn't risk, if Patson's got a back problem, I wouldn't risk him. He'd come out, Bishop would go in. I'd be tempted. Hume looked kind of knackered after those 3 games. You know, he looked wiped. I'd maybe be tempted to stick Huggins on the right and bring Taylor in on the left. Like I said, with Job, I'd maybe put him on the bench. You know, I think you've got options in the middle. I'd bring, maybe think about Pritchard, giving him a break. Barclay, he's been doing all right. Fair play to him, but give him a break.
3 or 4 on the bounce now, hasn't he?
He's never done that. He's never done that in the last 2 years. So, you know, bring him out, freshen him up a bit. You've got Roberts as well, who needs minutes in his legs. He needs first team football again, because as much as he wanted it when he came on against Cardiff, he wasn't quite there. Nothing really came off for him. So I'd like to see him. The thing with Burstow and Amir as well, when you're talking about them up front, is in Mowbray's mind, I'm sure he'll be confident going to Sheffield Wednesday, just like we are. You're thinking about these lads getting off the mark and getting a goal. And it's like almost saying, right, well, who do you think's going to take, who's going to take advantage of that? Is Burstow going to get off the mark? Is Amir going to get off the mark? Because playing a team like Sheffield Wednesday, where you're going to get chances, it's a fantastic opportunity for one of these lads to get their first goal and get off the mark, and that's it. That's their season started, basically, for a striker. They get their first goal. So he's going to be tempted with both of them. Like Burstow needs a goal. He's been in there in the mix since he joined us. And Mowbray was clearly impressed with what he did in training. So it's like, well, do I just keep with Burstow and he's going to get that chance and he's going to get the goal and that's him off and running? Or do I try and give that morale boost to Hamia to get that chance and get off the mark? So that's why I wouldn't be surprised if Burstow stayed up front, because Mowbray might see this as a chance for him to get that goal. And Rigg as well. I mean, like you said, he's never not impressed when he's came on. He's always impressed. And at what point do you stick him in that starting 11? You know, and it might depend on how many changes he makes. If he makes 3 or 4 other changes, he might see that Rigg coming in is a step too far. But if he wants to make 1 or 2, or if he wants to bring Pritchard out, which you're thinking Oshis is going to be in there, I imagine he wants to give Chris Rigg that start as well. So it's good. We're talking about all these options, which is brilliant. And, you know, that the under-21s game showed all of that. Big decisions for Mowbray. But like I said, I've got this voice on my shoulder just saying he's going to go in with the same 11.
Yeah. What do you think about the way the game's going to pan out then? Come on.
I think they're going to stick men behind the ball. They're going to, you know, I was looking at what they did against Ipswich, this kind of under the cosh for quite a lot of it, and then they kind of started to get a foothold in the game and kept possession. So if we score that goal, it'll be 3 or 4 nil. I think it'll be comfortable, but we just need to get off the mark. And yeah, so I think that it's going to be one of them. We're going to try and have to break them down. They're going to have men behind the ball. If they do what they did against Swansea, then it could end up a rout. If they give us space and they come out and attack us, which I just think that for a manager in this position, if he does that, then he might as well just resign at halftime or something like that. Because I think we'll have a few goals by then. So my good feeling is we'll have to break them down. They'll sit on the edge of the box. They'll play 5 at the back. They'll try and keep it tight. And we just need that first goal, and then the floodgates will open.
Yeah, I think we're going to batter them 3-0, 4-0. It's going to be one of those type of results. I just don't think they'll be able to live with us. And I think given the atmosphere about the place, we will just have too much for them. Mm. And I'm not looking at them and thinking this is a team who are going to fight and claw and battle and do you know what I mean? It feels like they've lost something since they got promoted.
He's dropped all those players who do that. From our point of view, talking about battling and bouncing back, the one thing I was looking about, I look back at last season, and we lost 13 times in the league last season, and I was looking at what happened after those defeats. And after 7 of those defeats, we followed it up with a win. So over half of those defeats, the next game we bounced back and won it. I mean, if we sort of kind of go in that with that sort of mentality, that we're good at bouncing back and getting our chins off the floor after losing out, then it should be good. I mean, three of those ended up in draws as well. So there was only successive games. There was only kind of once in October where we lost a couple, Blackburn and Burnley. And then in February when we lost 3 off the bounce, But that there was only those two occasions where we lost successive games. So hopefully that bodes well, and we follow a defeat up with 3 points. Be nice.
Yeah, well, we'll be back with the review, and hopefully we aren't left with egg on our faces, having sat here and absolutely slaughtered Sheffield Wednesday for the best part of an hour, but just has a feeling of inevitability about it, this game. And, you know, let's see if we can actually harness the negativity surrounding them and turn it into a positive for us. And I think we can. And if I had to put money on it, my good feeling would be we're going to do that. But it's Sunderland, and you just never know.
Yeah.
So
if we get beat, then the Ben's going to pick up a mysterious injury on Sunday morning, and he can't play footy.
I just avoid the place for the next. Just find another team and tell them you don't support Sunderland or something. Cheers, mate. Thanks as always for joining us.
All right.
Cheers to the listeners. We will be back after the game at some point, so make sure you check that out. We'll catch you then.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.